Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public.
Fanboy.
A male fan,
especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
Yes, another week on the podcast, and welcome to it, my next guest. We've crossed paths many, many years ago. I was trying to break into the bad world of radio, and he was the content director at CFM on the Sunshine Coast. Went in for a chat, said, yeah, we might put you on mid-dawns. Sent him a tape, and I never heard from him since. Kieran Atkinson, hello.
Which is why I'm kind of intrigued as to why I made it onto the podcast at all after
I might add that you have worked at several radio stations, 4CC, B105, and now you've found yourself in a whole different country, Kieran.
Yeah, it's a journey, isn't it? I guess that's kind of what this whole thing is about, the journey that you go on as you're moving through your career. And moved to New Zealand about 8 years ago and found myself kind of not minding being here, which is kind of cool.
It'd be nice and peaceful, I would imagine. Is there many big scenic fields around where you live? Are you in the regional parts of New Zealand, or is this just in my mind because I've watched way too many TV commercials that have the scenery of New Zealand?
Oh, the scenery is not too far away. I'm based in Christchurch. Okay. So, yeah. But one part of Christchurch is very, very flat, and then I'm on the kind of the southeastern side of town, which has some beautiful hills and nice bushwalks and things like that. So, yeah, very, very cool.
Oh, amazing. Now, the other thing I forgot to add in your intro was you are the voice of Joyce Mayne, no worries. But you don't actually get to hear the fully produced commercial. You just do your read and you get directed through it, and then you send it off to Australia, and all of a sudden it's on how many markets here? I have no idea.
There's about five, I think, that I voice those for. Voiceover is a funny thing. You just do the raw read, and with all the mistakes and the flubs and the breaths and all that sort of stuff, and you send it off to the producer, and they make it sound like $1 million. So I'm very grateful to those guys and girls.
Absolutely. Hey, let's go to the start. I remember reading a bit about you at 4CC, and that was some of the early days of networking in radio. But you had the old school type of networking where you had to time out carts and all that sort of fun stuff, didn't you?
Well, that's actually going through my second stint at 4CC. I went back for more punishment. I shouldn't say that. Look, that was a really, really good learning ground for me. But I started there when I was the ripe old age of 14.
Wow.
This will give my age away. So that was in 1985. And
you are pretty ageless when it comes to appearance. You've still got that youthful look, that youthful sound. Is it oil of Olay? Is that what you use, or you can't tell me?
Thanks, man. Checks in the mail. it was great. I remember, and this is a story I've told to many people that that have said, how did you get started in radio? And basically, I was a right royal pain in the ass. So I realized what I wanted to do, and the program director at 4CC back then was a guy by the name of Chris Costello, who passed away a number of years ago. But I went into the studio there and I practiced, and I rang him every single week for about 6 months until he finally called me and said, look, the guy that's was paneling Sunday nights running Take 40 Australia is leaving. If I give you that job, will you just leave me the hell alone? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So November 1985, I started playing, rolling the reel-to-reel tapes through of Barry Bissell doing Take 40 Australia.
Yes.
The good old days. And about 8 months later, I did my first live mid-dawn, which was pretty cool. So that was my first stint. But yeah, the second stint there in 1993 was doing the Wall of Death cart machines networking, and it was quite extraordinary. And they were quite innovative there. They had a small network of radio stations. There was Emerald, Roma, 4CC had a translator in Rockhampton and one in Billawila out west. So there were five different feeds, including the main transmitter. So if you can imagine a tower of three cart machines stacked five high.
Wow.
And this thing wasn't bolted down, mate. When you put in or removed carts from the top layer, the whole thing kind of wobbled. And, you know, if you remember back to how heavy one cart machine was, I remember thinking a few times, if this thing falls on me, I'm going to die.
Oh, like, there's no,
there's no coming back from it. But it worked really well. All you had to do was, you know, you hit one button on the desk and it fired the first column of carts. And as long as you had all your math right, it all timed out and back into the next song. So,
wow.
it was But you spent your entire shift filing and pulling carts. That's all you did, pretty much.
Yeah, those were the days, weren't they? When I started in radio, you'd have to do the cart pull at the beginning of the day and take it into the studio and, you know, cross-check to make sure all the ads were there and so forth. Now it's just all done by traffic and it just turns up on the computer. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I first started at B105, it was the last few months before they installed DCS.
Yep.
And they were still on carts at that point. So I was doing mid-dawns. So one of my jobs in mid-dawns was actually to pull all the CDs and carts for Ian Skippen, who was anchoring the morning crew.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool for a, you know, relatively young mid-dawn jock, first time in Cap City.
How old were you when you made it there?
It's 94, so I was 23.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I started there in late 1994 and did some assistant music directing with Irene Holm, and but it was really cool. Like, you know, landing at B105, my very first shift was the second day that I was there, and then at 4:30 in Roxy and Skippin, and then Jamie Dunn, and Donna, and you're thinking, oh my god, I mean, like, I'm actually on the show before radio royalty here.
Yeah.
And it was quite amazing, but they were just all of them were just amazingly generous, lovely people. They were just the best to work with. They really were.
Yeah. Yeah. I've worked with JB Dunn before, and wow, it took me a while to actually get the courage to talk to him, because I was like, whoa, he had such a presence. When he walked in the room, he just, you know, took everyone's attention. But after a while I found out how good a bloke he was. I was actually paneling a breakfast OB that was meant to happen, and I rocked up and he was there and everyone was there, and I'm like, what's going on? Oh, the promotions manager forgot to tell you that the OB got cancelled. So he actually put me in his car, did a cross from the car and drove me home and talked about where I lived and all that sort of stuff. It was hilarious.
Yeah, lovely guy.
Absolutely generous. So tell us, how did you get the job at B105? I mean, it was 4CC before then, and you've gone from regional radio doing networking to major metro, like, it was the pinnacle of Australian radio at the time, B105.
Yeah, it was. It was certainly the biggest station in Queensland. I was at, I was in Bundaberg prior to that.
Oh,
and
right, yeah.
Started at the, it was a relatively new FM station then. I think it's called River now.
Hits FM.
Yeah, so Hits FM 93.9. So yep. I was doing drive there, got promoted onto breakfast for the princely sum of $21,500, which was absolute poverty line minimum wage then for a five-day working week. They say that radio's glamorous, mate. It's not, is it? And while I was there, there was a guy doing mornings on the AM station 4BU by the name of Steve Andrews. And Steve was doing a lot of voiceover work, big, big voice. He passed away a number of years ago too. But he left 4BU and went to Brisbane, and he was actually the, for want of a better word, he was like the imaging voice for Channel 9 in Brisbane for a while, and was doing stuff for B105. And I kept in contact with him, and he called me one day and he said, can you get a demo tape in the mail to me, like, this afternoon express? I need it in my hand tomorrow. And I said, why? And he said, because they're looking for a mid-dawn jock at B105. He said, I know the PD's been like inundated with tapes, but he said, I will put the tape in his hand for you.
Wow.
And I went, okay. So I did an air check of my first hour of my show that day, or the last hour I was on breakfast then. That's right. Got it in the mail to Steve, and I got a call from Rob the next day, who was the PD at B105, Rob Logan. And he said, and this was a Tuesday, and he said, mate, I need you to start next Monday. And I went, oh, God, okay.
Wow.
So I called up the manager of 4BU and Hits FM that night, and I said, look, I've accepted a job at B105. I have to finish at the end of the week. And he said, fine. And I actually found out after I left that he didn't pay me for my final week there.
Ooh.
Because I didn't give him enough notice. He actually didn't pay me. Which was pretty incredible. I can still see the guy's face now. I won't say his name though.
Yeah.
But he wasn't my most favorite person at the time. But you know, it was great. It was a really, really big break, and I learned so much from all the people there, and especially Irene, who was the music director. Like some of the things that she taught me while I was there, I still use for music directing these days. So you know, there's a lot of great stuff that I learned from her and from Rob Logan and Jamie and Ian and the morning crew and everybody there. It was such a great experience.
Wow, it's like I said, it was the pinnacle of Australian radio. So many big names went through that station in the period that it launched. And my goodness, you were there. You were like firsthand seeing it all happening and experiencing it. And you've got those friends for life now too.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember I was there too when they started Martin Malloy. Remember Martin Malloy?
Yes.
Yeah. So part of my gig was actually to panel that 5 days a week, which was basically a live paneling situation. None of this networking stuff. Uh-huh. You know, they would give you an out cue, and you had 5 minutes and 15 seconds, which included a live traffic report. Yep. from the newsroom.
Yep.
So I had a little stopwatch. So I'd fire the first ad and the stopwatch, and then Monique Dew, who I think is with one of the stations in Brisbane.
Yeah, 97.3. We're going to be talking to her in an upcoming episode. So
yeah. So I'd play 4 minutes 30 of ads, and then Monique would come in and I'd hand the stopwatch to her, and she would read a live traffic report right up to the 5:15 point, and she would nail it every time.
Wow.
True professional. I love Absolutely. Monique. She's awesome.
Yeah, you really had the adrenaline rush back in the day with all these manual timings, and you know, you didn't have the computer to think of timing things out and squash audio down if you pre-recorded a voice track and these sort of complicated things. So you really were in the moment, living on the edge of the seat, and the like I said, the adrenaline rush was amazing, wasn't it? It was live radio.
Oh, it absolutely was. And that brings back a memory, another B105 memory to me, when I started paneling for the morning crew's Friday OBs. They would do like a suburb party every Friday from a different part of Brisbane. And one day I finished on a mid-dawn, and Rex Morris was their producer. Very well-known name in radio, of course, in Australia. So Rex Morris was their producer at the time, and he came into work and was he just started paneling the show, and he had this incredible tummy bug. Like really, really bad. Like the guy was going white. He was so ill, and I said, mate, you've got to go home. And he was shaking and shivering. And I said, mate, you know, there's no way that you can work. You shouldn't be here. And he said, well, what's the alternative? You can't panel. You've just come off air. And I said, well, if there's no one else here, I'll do it. And I slipped in and finished paneling that show. It was like from 7 till 10. And after that, they insisted that I do every Friday. I must have done an all right job.
Wow.
So I started doing that, and I think that lasted for over a year. But the really cool thing was, I remember one day where we while a song was playing, we had to do they had to record a phone interview, which was a really quick call to someone. And so I recorded that on reel to reel. Like I had one of the Atari tape decks, or yep, two of them actually, in the studio. And so they recorded it while the song was rolling, and I was giving Skip an update in his cans as to how long was left on the song. And I gave him a 30-second mark. They wrapped up the call, and just before I put their fader up, I heard Jamie go, Kieran, cue it up to this point here where I say blah, 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 and let me know when it's ready. So while they're talking, I'm spooling the tape back, cueing it up to the right point, and I remember going, Jamie, it's ready. And within 2 seconds, he gave me the cue, and I played it. And it was,
wow,
like, you know, it was one of those moments where you think, like, and your heart is going,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it all worked out. So I think, you know, that was probably one of the most intense and exciting things that I've that I had done to that point, probably have been to date, I would imagine.
So with that role on mid-dawns, I did hear you a couple of times across the day. Is that because You did like a weekend shift as well with your mid-dawns, or was it just something that eventually progressed into working across the days at B105?
Yeah, it was a weekend shift. I really, really pushed with Rob Logan to get that happening. Like I was doing air checks with him once or twice a week and just getting better and, you know, listening to guys like Jamie Angel and Craig Bruce doing their daytime shows and really trying to emulate what they were doing to move up a little bit. So I eventually got, you know, the nod to do a daytime show, and you can imagine how fast the heart was going then.
Yeah.
So it ended up eventually that I had my week consisted of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning mid-dawns. So I'd finish at 6 a.m. And I remember my week specifically really, really intensely, because it was such an intense roster. So I'd finish at 6 o'clock on Thursday morning off air. Then there'd be an 11 o'clock jocks meeting, which I had to attend. I didn't have a choice. I had to be there. So I'd come off air at 6, go home, get 3 hours sleep, go back in for the jocks meeting, which was pretty good actually, because then I had to turn my whole body clock around to be starting at 6 o'clock on Friday for the morning crew OB. Then I do a Saturday 10 till 2 or a 2 till 6 in the afternoon. And then I'd have the rest of Sunday and Monday off. But I didn't really count Monday as a day off, because as far as my brain was thinking, I was on air at midnight.
Oh, yes, of course.
So, yeah, it was kind of, you know, through the week I'd go through this whole kind of somersault of sleeping sleeping routine, which was really, really weird. But, you know, it was just the way you had to do it then.
Absolutely. So from B105, you went a trip up the Bruce Highway and end up at CFM.
Yeah, which was with the amazing Paul Amos, who runs Extra Research these days. But Paul was a great boss. He was really, really amazing and supportive. And it was from there I went to, I actually followed him to the Gold Coast.
Yep.
Because he was, I think he was Group PD at that point. So I got into the Gold Coast from there, was at CFM for a while, moved over to Gold, did some music directing on both stations. And then after that, where was that? Oh, where did I go then? Oh, that's right. Yeah, I went AWOL for a little while. I kind of gave up full-time radio for a little bit and then came back to it later on around the early 2010 area and went back to CFM to do some casual shows. So, yeah, but I've kind of been self-employed since then. For about the last 10 years or so, I've just been self-employed doing voiceovers, and I build websites on the side.
Oh, yeah.
And just involved in a little bit of radio here. There's a commercial FM license up on the North Island. That's an independently owned commercial FM license that I program remotely.
So which one's that? Is that XS 80s? Is that the one?
Oh, that's my little hobby project. I'll tell you about that in a sec.
Yep.
But yeah, this one is called CFM, but it's with a C, so it's it stands for Coromandel, which is like an area of the North Island.
Okay.
But it's an independent radio station, so it's not owned by the big networks. It's a purely locally run, locally owned station. So I program that, which is a whole lot of fun. But yeah, XS80s is my hobby, which I started with a mate over here with a mutual love of 80s music. But the beauty of New Zealand and the way they legislate the radio spectrum is that they have these beautiful things called the FM guard bands, which is like the very bottom and the very top of the FM region. So anywhere from 106.7 upwards and from 87.3 downwards is basically a free-for-all. Like they call it the low power FM general user agreement. So what that means is that anybody, and I mean absolutely anybody, can buy themselves a little FM transmitter and stick an aerial up, and you can broadcast without a license on one of those frequencies on the guard band. And it's basically like an honor system. So there's no protection for your frequency. If someone else lights up a transmitter and it's on your frequency, then, you know, you have to just wear that or contact, you know, find out where they're coming from and try and negotiate with them. But so I've got an FM transmitter up on the hill in Christchurch here, which is about, I don't know, 300 feet up overlooking the city. So for on 1 watt, it gets a bit of coverage. You're only allowed to go up to 1 watt of power, which is, you know, not very much. But if you've got it in the right location, it can really get some distance. But I've actually got that station now on 6 different transmitters across the South Island, one on the North Island, and it runs online as well. And it's just 80s music. So it's just a hobby that I play with. It's, yeah, a lot of fun.
Oh, man, that sounds like the dream, really. And yet you still haven't developed the New Zealand accent, or can you try and emulate that?
I have a problem where I tend to mimic people when I'm around them. So,
oh yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and it's not something that's a conscious thing. It's definitely subconscious. But I have developed a little bit of a twang since I've been here. But there are still, even if I meet someone new these days, they look at me with a kind of a sideways look, and they say, "Oh, you're from Aussie, aren't you?"
Ah.
You know, so it's obviously still there, but. I remember when I first got here, and after about 6 months, I started doing some shows on the local Moore FM station here in Christchurch.
Yep.
And the very first show that I did, the very first phone call that I answered, I picked up the phone and said hello, and this guy goes, "Oh, hey, Brew, you're from Aussie, right?" You know, and this lovely, lovely guy, and I spoke to him for about 10 minutes, but he was really, really lovely. He's, "Oh, nice to hear an Aussie accent on the radio, Brew," you know, like,
yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. Oh, so good to talk to you, Kieran Atkinson. I knew you had an amazing story to tell, and so many in there as well. And it's good to see the Aussies going to New Zealand. There's been quite a few go through the last 10 years. I've seen Rod Meldon pop up over there, your fine self, of course. Any other names that have crossed the ditch and given New Zealand radio a go that I don't know about?
Yeah, well, if you know, there's a guy by the name of Mal Lewis who has done a lot of programming around Australia. Well, he came over to New Zealand and worked for MediaWorks on a brand over here called The Sound, which is like it's your straight out AOR, adult oriented rock album rock radio station. It's a really, really good format, actually. I really love The Sound's music. So it's like 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s album rock. Really, really good stuff. So he programmed that for a while, and he actually got my foot in the door there. So I would actually voice track a show from Christchurch once a week, which would actually go out nationally here in New Zealand, because that's a national brand. So Mal was over here. While he was here, he actually brought Kim Blair over from Australia as well.
Yes, that was the other name I was trying to put my finger on.
Yeah, so Kim was at The Sound for over a year, but he now programs a station over here called Magic, which is like a mix of older music and talk. So it's talk for some of the day, and for the rest of the day, they play like 50s, 60s, 70s music. So he's the content director now for that national brand as well. So Kim's been here for quite a number of years and has really found his niche, which is great. And he's a great bloke too. So yeah, it was really good to catch up with him in Auckland.
And no doubt you would have seen his little sketch that he did called The Mid-Dawn Guy when he was at Mix FM.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was with Lee Hubner and a couple of other guys at Mix FM in those days. They did an awesome job of those. They really did.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many so much truth to that story that was told. It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It was more autobiographical than anything else, I reckon.
Kieran Atkinson, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast. And, yeah, next time I'm in New Zealand, I'll catch up for a beer.
Hey, cool, Bevo. Great to talk to you too, man. It's a lot of fun.
You can join us on the Radio Fanboy podcast anytime. Just hit us up on the website, theradiofanboy.com.au.
The Radio Fanboy podcast was hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions.